Welcome to the Bill Barnwell Show. I am Bill Barnwell, ESPN. It's Monday, December 23rd, 2019. Have some Week 16 stuff to talk about. Have some season sort of recappy things to discuss here on the show today. And I wanted to talk about the Cleveland Browns, a team that was in playoff contention heading into Sunday. But unlike the Raiders, who had five different results go their way, including their own victory, the Browns did not win. They lost 31-15 to the Ravens, ended their season at 6-9. They will play a meaningless Week 17 game. And joining me to talk about that and what happened with the Browns this year is someone who's covered the Browns for us all year at ESPN. It's Jake Trotter. Jake, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. And by the way, a very Browns thing happened yesterday. All the help that they needed, Tennessee loses, Indianapolis wins, Pittsburgh loses, all came true. So the Browns would have been very much in the playoff picture going into the last weekend, but of course they couldn't take care of their own business, which I think is pretty indicative of the way this season has gone.
Wow, it really is a perfect sort of characterization of everything else that has happened this year. Man, what a mess. I mean, let's just start with that. I mean, how surprised are you all together that this is what happened versus your preseason expectations?
I am very surprised, but I have to couch that by saying I have not been in Cleveland in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think that if I had been here in the past, I probably wouldn't have been as surprised. But I was naive about the culture hurdle that this franchise has to overcome, mm-hmm. Demons of the past, being an obstacle for them. For me, I just looked at the team on paper and said, oh, yeah, you got Odell Beckham, you got Jarvis Landry, you got Nick Chubb, Baker Mayfield, Miles Garrett, Denzel Ward, and you're like, I don't even see the scenario in which this team doesn't make the playoffs with that kind of talent. But one thing about the NFL, the margin is so small, and when you continually shoot yourself in the foot and you're self-destructive and your chemistry in the locker room is not great and you have mm-hmm. a leadership void and there's a couple of positions that are in bad shape, including the offensive line, sometimes that outweighs whatever talent you have. And so I think gradually as the season wore on, I realized that just having talent alone isn't enough for a franchise like Cleveland, which for years has had one of the worst cultures, I think we all agree, in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's fair to say. Was there a moment for you where it sort of clicked and you realized, oh, my expectations were maybe too optimistic and this isn't happening the way that I was figuring it was going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, I think coming out of the bye, which was before Halloween, they were going to New England. They were 2-4 at that point, and there was a lot of optimism publicly, but also privately. Like, they thought they were going to go up there to Foxborough and play really well, maybe even win the game. And I said, okay, like, you know, they had the week to figure out some things, and I thought that they might go up there and actually play well. And in one way, some ways, they sort of did. But then in the first half, Chubb fumbles. Baker throws an interception on a Utah pass, on a shovel pass. Mm-hmm. They turn the ball over on three consecutive possessions. Oof. And you're just like, you can't do that against the Cincinnati Bengals and win, much less the New England Patriots.
Right.
And it just kind of felt like at that point, this season is not going to go their way. And I think the following week, it was really reinforced. They're playing Brandon Allen, who at one point was Denver's quarterback this season, mm-hmm. A guy most people, I think, even intense NFL fans probably had never heard of before. And they lose that game, and you have, you know, Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry wearing cleats where the NFL tells them they have to change them at halftime. You've got Baker Mayfield shaving three times at the stadium, and you have Jermaine Whitehead tweeting threats to people from the locker room, like, I'm watching this in real time. PR staff is imploring him to stop. He's not. His Twitter account gets suspended before he even gets on the bus to leave the stadium and his way the next day. And I think at that point you realize, holy smokes, this is a total circus. Mm-hmm. And it remained that way, actually became even more of a circus, especially in that Pittsburgh game, as the season went along. So I think that kind of two-week stretch, I started to realize that this is becoming a total debacle.
Yeah, I mean, I even forgot about the Jermaine Whitehead thing, and just remember what you said, it, I'm like, oh, yeah, they're, you know, the, I believe, the only player to threatened physical assault on a bunch of people over social media from the locker room this season. So a bit of an
Bill, there are there. So many things that have happened this year where you forget that they happened because so many things have happened since.
It really is crazy how many things have happened with the Browns this year. I mean, let's just start with the obvious candidate, right? Let's start with the centerpiece of the franchise, Baker Mayfield, who someone you covered at Oklahoma. I mean, how did Baker Mayfield look and act in 2019 versus the guy you saw at Oklahoma? And, I mean, were you surprised by what you saw, or was it just sort of, you think, a natural progression of what was happening with the franchise?
So are we talking about off the field or on the field or both? I think
a mix of both.
I think off the field, there was just a little bit more tension. I didn't see the Baker who was really loose throughout college, you know, seemed to be having fun. You know, for a while there, I think kind of around that Denver game, you know, it was really tense with the local media between Baker and some of the people there. And you know, I think that as the season went along, he loosened up a little bit, or it wasn't quite as there wasn't as much friction as there had been. But even when you watch him play, like you didn't see the same Baker, you know, playing with the same kind of joy that he did at Oklahoma. And I don't know if it's the pressure that was getting to him, or if he was just frustrated with the way he was playing, or that he was part of a losing team for really the first time in his entire career. I think all of those factors probably contributed to it. And I know Baker really wanted to be the leader of this team. And I think he said as much, you know, at the combine, like, I want to change the culture in Cleveland, draft me and I can do it. Mm-hmm. And I think one, you know, he probably overestimated what that was going to take. And then two, when you're not playing well yourself, and you're a young guy, it is hard to be that leader. Mm-hmm. Like if you're leading the league in interceptions, which he was for a good chunk of the season, it's hard to call other guys out. Mm-hmm. And really, when you look at this locker room, I mean, it is devoid of leadership, particularly on the defensive side. I mean, you know, as a reporter covering a team, you always know the guys you go to kind of get a pulse for, you know, what that side of the ball is thinking or doing or reacting. And there's like nobody to go to on the defensive side right now with the Browns. And then offensively, I mean, you've got Baker, you've got Jarvis, you got Joel Petonio. But really, when you look at the overall locker room, there's just not a lot of leadership there. And so you see a locker room that's kind of incapable of policing itself in a lot of ways. And I think it created an even bigger void when Baker wasn't playing well. And I think that was frustrating to him on top of just not playing well on the field in of itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that makes total sense in terms of, you know, the leadership void. Do you think that's something we could have foreseen heading into the season? Maybe we just, you know, sort of as a collective expecting the Browns to be better, you know, were naive about, or maybe just weren't paying enough attention to, or how do you think that sort of slipped in?
Yeah, I think that probably a combination of all those factors. You know, I think part of it too is, you know, let's be honest, this front office has prioritized talent sort of regardless of character. Mm-hmm. Look at some of the guys that they've drafted. Antonio Callaway comes to mind. Something else happened this year that you totally forget. I mean, that Pittsburgh game on Thursday night, Callaway is waived like hours before the game. Of course, the Myles Garrett thing, you know, overshadowed that whole ordeal. But the week before, he was late to the stadium on game day. And so they ended up benching him, making him inactive. And then he had subsequently done a drug test for the second time. So he was going to be suspended for 10 games. So, I think when you have a lack of leadership and then you have a bunch of guys like that, which this team does, you know, guys that you just can't rely on, I think it creates, a culture issue. So I don't know that we could have maybe foreseen it before the season in terms of they weren't going to have enough leaders. But I think there were some red flags on some guys that this situation had a chance to backfire. Just looking at the track record of some of the guys that they brought in and drafted.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In terms of the wide receivers, I mean, Jarvis Landry denied that he asked the Cardinals trade for him. Odell Beckham has had several incidents this year. Most recently, he was visibly angry in a conversation with Freddie Kitchens on Sunday. And I know that Odell said that it was about some of the things the Ravens were doing and the personal foul he was called for. How important is any of this? Do you think any of this really sticks in the long run, or is it just sort of, you know, or is it a sign that there is genuine long-term significant unhappiness with these two stars and the Browns organization?
I don't think there's any doubt there was unhappiness with the way that the season has gone. And, I mean, for Odell, a lot of it is understandable. He's hurt. He's been playing hurt all year. Mm-hmm. And then on top of not being the same guy on the field, he basically hasn't practiced since they traded for him. Like, I don't know if people realize this. They trade for him in the spring. He doesn't go to OTAs. He practices one day at minicamp, like maybe a week in training camp, sits out the rest of training camp, and then basically since then has only practiced on Fridays.
Wow.
So you wonder why Baker and he seem to be not on the same page on game days. Well, they basically have never practiced together except for a handful of times. Mm-hmm. So I think that obviously has contributed to the frustration, the unhappiness, the fact that, you know, they're losing. You know, he's having a terrible year statistically when you're talking about Odell. And, you know, I mean, you knew when you traded for Odell, there was going to be some of the drama. Mm-hmm. You know, that has always surrounded him. And, you know, it's kind of interesting covering him this year. You know, he wears a $190,000 watch in the opener, but doesn't want to talk about it. You know, he is constantly doing stuff with his uniform and then gets mad that the NFL is fining him for it. You know, but then you wear clown shoes on the Joker shoes against Denver that clearly violated, you know, uniform rules. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you just go down the list. And then, you know, you're reportedly telling people to come get me, but then you're wondering why we're asking questions about whether you want to be in Cleveland past this season. So there's like interesting paradox with Odell that I've really noticed this year. I think that had they not come out last Wednesday and said, well, particularly Odell, had Odell not come out last Wednesday and said, you know, I'm going to be here, I would have probably, I think it would have been more likely that they would have traded him than not at that point. But wow. At least that kind of quelled the drama a little bit, quashed the drama a little bit, because it was completely enveloping that team. You know, after the Bengals game, they beat the Bengals a couple of weeks ago. That morning, that report that Odell was telling people, come get me, a few days before that, he was really vague about his future to people in the media in Cleveland. And just in the locker room after, when it felt like a loss again. It was like the second time in a row that they'd beaten a divisional opponent at home, and it felt like a loss because all the attention was about Odell's future. The body language during the game was terrible, and then, you know, it was very kind of morose in the locker room after all of that. So it just that I think all of that comes with Odell, and if they didn't know that when they traded for him, they surely know that now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Another receiver who there wasn't much drama about during the season, but we have some late drama with him later in the year is David Njoku, who, you know, seemed like he was going to be a possible breakout candidate this year, suffered a wrist injury, missed several months. And then he came back, he played one game as a part-time player, and then, to my knowledge, and please correct me if I'm wrong here, he's been a healthy scratch the last couple of weeks. So what happened with David Njoku here?
He has been a healthy scratch the last 2 weeks, and, you know, people are looking for, like, a Demaryius Randall-type incident or, you know, something that happened that has led to this. I mean, really, the truth is they just don't think he's very good. Mm-hmm. And I think they're tired of him. And you know, he came back from the wrist injury, and first touch he has, I think it was against the Bengals. These games are starting to mesh together in my head. Mm-hmm. He has the ball wrestled away from him, ends up being ruled an interception, you know, he's yelling at people on the sideline. I think they just got tired of all of that. And, you know, I think they view him as a guy that thinks he's better than he actually is. So mm-hmm. I would be surprised if he's with this team next year. And, you know, this is another first-round draft pick. I mean, there's a long list of first-round draft picks with the Browns that are no longer with the team already. And I think that he's a prime trade candidate this offseason. The question is anybody going to want him? You know, they might have to just jettison him for whatever they can get. They would like to, you know, package him, you know, for some offensive line help potentially. But he's fallen completely out of favor in Cleveland. And, I don't see – you know, if they make a coaching change, obviously that could change. But I think, at least in the current regime, I don't think he has much of a future in Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, he's another one of the Sashi Brown picks that John Dorsey has, you know, basically got rid of almost everybody Sashi Brown selected. I think even from that draft, they're now down to Myles Garrett and Larry Ogunjobi.
That's correct.
Yeah, I mean, yep. It's, you know, not shocking to me that they would they would lose interest in David Njoku. But I mean, for a guy who, you know, seems so exciting heading into the year, it's like he has such upside, it's got to be disappointing. And then you mentioned possibly trading Njoku for offensive line help. And I know heading into the year, that was my biggest concern with this team was the offensive line and some of the issues there. And they had traded Kevin Zeitler before the year and hadn't really replaced him. Do you think John Dorsey should have expected the offensive line woes? I mean, do you think they just had too much faith in Austin Corbett to play a role, or what happened here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they should have foreseen the issues that they wound up having, you know, not only with Corbett, but, you know, with Greg Robinson and Chris Hubbard. I mean, let's face it, guys that are probably backup tackles. And at least with Hubbard, you know, he's a guy that you can rely on. You know, he's going to work hard. You know, he's going to come to work. With Robinson, you don't know what you're going to get from week to week. I mean, there was a sequence yesterday against Baltimore where he has a holding penalty and then a false start penalty, and all of a sudden they're like inside their 8-yard line, you know, going the other way. So, you know, neither tackle has been very good. And in the case of Robinson, I mean, they had to bench him for that New England game. The problem this team has, and you know, when we talk about the leadership issues, they don't have anybody else that they can play. It's not like they can say, well, we're done with Robinson, so we're going to play. They don't have anybody like that, really. You know, they're already playing Kendall Lamb at right tackle for Chris Hubbard until he hurt his knee last weekend. So they don't have any other options at tackle. And you know, talk about Baker Mayfield, when you don't have trust in your offensive line, that's going to affect you. When you talk about Odell Beckham, if you can't throw the ball, you don't have the time to throw the ball downfield, that's going to affect you as well. So the offensive line issues have contributed to all kinds of problems they've had in the passing game. And then, you know, John Dorsey drafted Corbett with a second-round pick. They traded Zeitler thinking that Corbett was going to be ready to step in. And not only was he not ready to step in, but he wasn't even going to make the team. They sent him to the Rams, you know, for the best pick that they could get, you know, around the trade deadline. So it's been a mess. That trade has not worked out because Olivier Vernon really hasn't made much of an impact. He's been hurt, even when he's been healthy. You know, there's only been a game or two that you've really noticed him. So it's been a huge issue, and I think that we all talked about that before the season. So if we all saw it coming, then I think that the front office should have seen it as well. And they made some major miscalculations in running it back with their offensive tackles and then just assuming this guy – their second-year draft pick was going to be ready to step up at right guard. So now they don't have just two holes on the offensive line. They have three. And it's very hard to win in the NFL when you only really have two starting-caliber offensive linemen, which is what they have.
Yeah, absolutely. On the defensive side of the ball, I mean, is it simple enough to say that it was just, you know, a combination of the injuries in the secondary at the beginning of the year and then during the second half you didn't have Myles Garrett and Olivier Vernon for most of that time?
Yeah, I mean, the defense is shot at this point. You know, Christian Kirksey is, you know, we're talking about leadership. That's a guy that they really missed, you know, suffered a torn pectoral early on in the season. You know, they've had different guys this year that have not been able to play for reasons other than injury. I mean, the Demaryius Randall thing, they're going to Pittsburgh, maybe the biggest game that Cleveland has played in years. I mean, if they win that game, we're probably talking about them, you know, even despite the loss to Baltimore, you know, potentially very much still in the playoff picture. And, you know, to beat Pittsburgh on the road, which this team hasn't done in like forever, you know, you have one of your starters just skip a practice the week of. I mean, that's difficult to overcome, I think, psychologically, but then obviously in the game itself, because the Duck was just bombing away on them in that game, you know, against basically a backup secondary. So, I mean, their defense is shot. They have no pass rush anymore without Myles Garrett. You know, as you mentioned, Vernon has been hurt for much of the year. They're playing guys out there that, like, I forget that they're even on the team because they just picked them up in the last couple of weeks up front. You know, they have Brian Cox Jr. out there, you know, who wasn't with the team for much of the season. So, yeah, I mean, you look at their team, they're like, they're just not very talented anymore because of injuries and suspensions and, you know, various issues that they've had. You know, when they were at full capacity, though, they weren't that great either. They were, like, outside the top 15 in efficiency. So it wasn't like this was a dominant defense that got, you know, kneecapped and then couldn't recover. They were, like, an okay defense that lost many of their best players and is completely, you know, capitulated here down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you think about week one, where granted there were some turnovers. The Titans had, I think, a safety and a defensive touchdown. But even after you get rid of those, they allowed 34 points to Marcus Mariota's Titans, who Marcus Mariota got benched because over the rest of the time he spent, he really was unable to move the ball altogether before giving way to Ryan Tannehill. So, I mean, you know, this defense, even at the beginning of the year, was not playing very well.
No, and they, you know, gave up 31 to San Francisco. I want to say they gave up like 30-something to Seattle. I mean, they had a lot of games here where they got lit up pretty good. So, you know, the one play in the Tennessee game that sticks out is, you know, I think they finally cut it to one score, and then Tennessee runs like a throwback screen to Henry.
Yes.
You know, who goes untouched for like a you know, 75-yard touchdown. I mean, they just haven't – they've had too many lapses this year. You saw them yesterday against Baltimore where, you know, they're just turning – Ravens tight end Mark Andrews loose in the second half. And it's just, it's hard to beat people when you have busts like that, but they're not talented anymore on that side of the ball. I mean, they're playing backups across the board with the exception of just a few positions. So it's, you know, it's very difficult considering they weren't that great to begin with to be relying on guys that, you know, are practice squad caliber players.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. In terms of Freddie Kitchens, I mean, you know, the simple thing, I guess, is that he's the person who should be in charge here, and it's not go the way things were expecting, so he's, you know, his job is on the line here. Do you think the Browns are going to fire Freddie Kitchens, and do you think the Browns should fire Freddie Kitchens, given how they've played this year?
Well, I think the evidence is mounting that it's probably more likely that he gets fired. I think 2 weeks ago, I might have gone the other way, just in terms of trying to interpret what I think they are going to do. But, I mean, you know, they were listless in Arizona. You know, that's a game that when you're still in the playoff mix, you have to win. And they got basically blown out by, you know, Cliff Kingsbury and Kyler Murray. And then, you know, I think they actually played hard Sunday against Baltimore. I think that they played well in some cases, but you go to the end of the first half, you're down 7-6 to the best team in the NFL. It's like a minute to go. It's 3rd and 10. The Ravens have no timeout. You run the ball, you go to half, and you're in the game. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, I didn't really understand Freddie's explanation after the game. I asked him about it. You throw the ball. Incomplete. Clock stops, Ravens get the ball, Lamar goes right down the field and scores a touchdown, 14-6. At that point, the game was over. Baltimore gets the ball in the third quarter, goes down and scores again, and that's it. Like, you're not coming back against that team. So, you know, I covered college football for a long time before this, and if you're Ohio State, if you're Alabama, if you're Clemson, the margin for error is so significant that you can get away with that stuff. You know, you can still beat most of the teams in your conference. Even when you have lapses like that. But in the NFL, where the margin is so small, you do that, you're probably not going to win. And when you look at the 20 penalties in the opener to Tennessee, the 4th and 9 draw against the Rams, you know, up to what happened yesterday, there's just been too much of that all year that I think has robbed this team of any chance of reaching its potential, you know, of becoming that playoff team we thought they were going to be. So, I mean, I think that they've been looking for every reason to give Freddie another chance next year. I think they've been looking for that, particularly John Dorsey, because this is the guy he hired, he staked his reputation on. And the last couple of weeks, Freddie just hasn't given him one. And, like, if you keep – I think that they're very cognizant of the fact that they have fired a bunch of coaches, you know, going back to 99, and a bunch really just since the Haslams bought the team in 2012. I think it would be their 7th head coach if they fired Freddie. So I think that might be in the back of their minds. But if you keep Freddie and you know he's not the guy, and you probably think you're going to fire him at the beginning of next year anyway, I think that's a classic mistake that people make. Is if we know we're going to fire him next year if things don't go well, we're not going to give him the time to figure this out, you know, and that would be, I think, 3 seasons at least, then we got to go ahead and make a change. And I think that they might be reconciling that right now, that, you know, this is not really working out. And I don't know if we see this working out next year. And I mean, it's an important season because you got Baker Mayfield going into year three. That mm-hmm. extension is going to be available an option for him after the year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is a team that hasn't had a franchise quarterback since Bernie Kosar. So you do not want to mess this up. And if you don't see Baker Mayfield taking a big step forward at year three in the current regime, then I don't see how you don't make a change at that point.
Absolutely.
But, you know, we'll see. I think, again, Dorsey wants a reason to keep him, but I just don't know what reasons he'd be looking at this point that would make it viable.
I mean, do you think that's enough to fix the problems with this team?
A head coaching change?
Yeah.
No, I think they'd have to do some other things. They're going to have – they have three offensive linemen they have to go get. You know, whether that one's in the draft and they trade for another and you know, maybe somebody develops. They've got to shore up their offensive line. They're actually kind of low-key – shallow at wide receiver. You know, after Landry and Beckham, they don't have anybody at this mm-hmm. point, you know, especially with Callaway, you know, getting waived. So I think they need to pick up a third receiver. They need a ton of safety help. They're going to need defensive line help. So they've got some holes that they're going to have to address. But if somebody put it to me yesterday, like, you get the right coach in here, this could be a 12-win team. I don't know if I agree with that, but the talent is there. They have Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry and Nick Chubb and a couple really good offensive linemen, and Myles Garrett at some point will be back, and Denzel Ward. I mean, they have got the talent to be a playoff team, but mm-hmm. they have to figure out, you know, from the inside out, how to fix the issues that have plagued them this year.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Well, Jake, we're going to have more reporting from you on the Browns in the weeks to come. Where can people check that out?
Yeah, ESPN.com, the NFL page, the Browns page, and then I guess on Twitter, Jacob Trotter.
Awesome. Well, Jake, thank you so much. We're going to come back here on the break, or after the break, I should say, on the Bill Barnwell Show here in a moment. Back here on the Bill Barnwell Show, I'm Bill Barnwell of ESPN. Talked about the Browns in the first segment. Now we're going to talk about the Patriots, a team that the record's great, 12-3. They've clinched an AFC East title, but I think it's absolutely fair to say there's been some question marks about this team in recent weeks. And then Saturday, I should say, they delivered one of their best performances in the season in a 24-17 victory over the Buffalo Bills. Sorry, I can't talk today, which is bad for a podcast. But hopefully my guest is someone who is far more eloquent than I. It's my friend Doug Kide of Nesson. Doug, how are you?
I'm doing well. That's a tall ask for me to be more eloquent, but I will certainly try.
I have total faith in you, Doug. You are a man who covers the Patriots and does great work for Nesson, and I'm really intrigued because I feel like this is a team where typically during the year, based on what I see from you and what I hear about in talking to you and the Patriots fans, I think we both have in our mentions, more so you than I, it feels like this is a fan base that is constantly worried about the Patriots. Either worried about the Patriots during the regular season or indignant that anybody could possibly be worried about the Patriots during the regular season. And usually the Patriots kind of struggle and then they sort of come together during the second half and then the playoffs come and they're pretty good. That's how the formula seems to have worked for a while now. Do you think the concerns people and fans have raised about the Patriots over the last few weeks are valid? And do you think that they showed anything against those sort of critiques or concerns in Saturday's win over the Bills?
I think they actually were fairly valid. I had very little hope for the Patriots offense. Even after a game against the Bengals where they put up 31 points, it just seemed like the Patriots weren't able to pass the ball. The running game wasn't very consistent. So, I mean, this is still a team that's, you know, 12-3, and entering this week they were 11-3, and they are going to finish with a better record than they did last season when they won a Super Bowl. So I didn't think the concerns were, you know, I think they were a little bit overblown, but I definitely had some concerns about the Patriots offense heading into this week. And I think they did prove some doubters a little bit wrong. And I think that those doubters had reason to be doubting. I'm not certainly not saying that, but I think that the offense looked put back together in this game against the Bills. We'll see mm-hmm. if the Patriots can maintain it now through the final week of the regular season and into the postseason. But I definitely think that Tom Brady looks better against the Bills. I think the run game has been good for 2 weeks now. And this was against a very good defense. And obviously the game against the Bengals was against a fairly crappy team. So I don't think I could take away that much from that game. Mm-hmm. This Bills game, however, I can. And I think that the Patriots offense looked maybe not completely back to normal, but they certainly were far more efficient than they had been through really the last 8 or so weeks.
Yeah, I mean, even in that Bengals game, Tom Brady didn't play very well. And you might say, okay, well, Julian Edelman wasn't 100%, and without Julian Edelman being 100%, that offense is really lacking in talented receivers. But it was really seemed like more of the running game and more of the defense creating opportunities in that Bengals game. But this was a game where, like you said, a great defense in Buffalo, one of the best defenses in all of football, and the offense seemed to steadily drive the football. It wasn't, you know, the 2007 Patriots or anything, or even the 2019 Patriots in September. But, I mean, what are the Patriots do in this game, and what did Josh McDaniels do to get the offense going?
Yeah, one thing is that Tom Brady did not throw a single pass over 20 yards in this game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll see if they kind of open up the offense a little bit more moving forward. But I do think that it's probably smarter to stick to some shorter passes in this current iteration of the Patriots offense where there's not a whole lot of speed. And even a guy like N'Keal Harry, who's a first-round pick, physical specimen, he's not a speedy receiver. He's a physical receiver. He's a guy who can pick up yards after the catch using his strength and you know, a little bit of his agility. But he's not a burner. Mohamed Sanu's not a burner. Julian Edelman's not a burner. Jacoby Myers certainly isn't a burner. The running backs aren't burners. So I think that sticking to those short passes certainly worked in this game. I think that Josh McDaniels started to get a little bit more creative as well, which I think is certainly something that the Patriots needed to get done to, you know, get the ball in N'Keal Harry's hands and to get the ball in Rex Burkhead's hands and James White's hands. We saw a decent amount of two running back sets, which I think is something that we'll see moving forward. We even saw some pistol formations, which is something that you very, very, very rarely, if ever, see from the Patriots, where they either had, you know, Mohamed Sanu or N'Keal Harry or a running back standing behind Tom Brady in a shotgun formation. Mm-hmm. I think that they were really trying to use some trickery to their advantage. So maybe they're at the point now where guys like Mohamed Sanu and guys like N'Keal Harry, who are newer to the offense, and Jacoby Myers, know the offense well enough where they can actually expand a little bit and start to get a little bit more creative without having to worry about guys being in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, I think that's what's interesting about the Patriots here is that, you know, I mean, they do change stuff every year. They do install some stuff during the season every year, but it felt like this was stuff I'd never seen the Patriots run before. And, you know, I think that's really interesting to do that on really a short week with, you know, a quarterback who is in his 40s and who has made things work for a long time. I mean, are you expecting that to continue? Do you think we'll see more new stuff from the Patriots as these sort of season goes on and we get into the postseason, or is it just, you know, kind of a 1 week thing to show some new things on tape before the postseason?
No, I certainly would not be surprised if they continue to expand into the postseason. I think that, you know, there is an element of the Patriots saving things. That might sound obvious, maybe that's not obvious, but I think that, you know, depending on the game, depending on the opponent, depending on the time of year, they're going to simplify their offense a little bit more. They're going to expand it a little bit more in a must-win game like they had on Saturday. That's really to start to take some of the tricks out. And I think that obviously we saw it working against the Bills. So that is one of the reasons why I'm kind of hopeful for the Patriots offense moving forward here as well, that they might be able to expand a little bit and show some more tricks. I wonder, I personally thought heading into this game against the Bills that it was a good matchup for the Patriots. And I think that other people sort of disagreed with that notion, saying that the Bills were kind of built to beat the Patriots. And that might have been true in the past when the Patriots had a high-powered offense and you know, an okay defense. This year, I think the Patriots are going to do better against teams who have really good defenses, who aren't quite as high-powered on offense, because they don't have to worry about keeping up with a high-powered offense. And quite frankly, I mean, the offense certainly did prove me a little bit wrong in this, but the offense isn't going to be the 2007 iteration no matter which defense they're playing, and that's whether they're playing the Texans or the Chiefs, who don't have very good defenses, or the Bengals, who do have a good defense. I think that, you know, there's not going to be a lot of fluctuation as far as the Patriots offense goes. So if their defense can shut down the opposing offense, then they're probably going to win a game. But if their offense has to keep up with a team like the Chiefs or the Texans or someone else like that, then I think that they might struggle. And that's something that they'll have to prove me wrong in into the postseason, because they're obviously going to play those teams like the Ravens, like the Chiefs, and like the Texans, who do have very good offenses. But I thought heading into this game that the Patriots were built to beat a team like the Bills, and it was a little bit closer than I expected it to be, but they still came out with a win, and they still looked better than they had in previous weeks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You mentioned Mohamed Sanu earlier. In terms of his production and his performance since arriving in the Patriots, obviously there was an injury, but have you been surprised with what little impact he's had, and do you think he can grow into a larger role in the postseason, or sort of, you know, what we've seen from him so far this year is what we should expect for the rest of the season?
I still think that he will, you know, get better as he stays in this offense longer. I think that the ankle injury definitely hurt because that was taking away practice reps. They brought him back pretty early from that. I don't think he was 100% for a few weeks. We did see his role in the offense expand this week, but it still didn't really lead to very much production. So I think that, you know, the Patriots offense will be better the more that they can spread it around. So I don't really see Mohamed Sanu going back to being that 10-catch guy that he was against the Ravens, but I do think that he will be a piece in this offense, just like N'Keal Harry will be a piece in this offense, and just like, you know, Rex Burkhead will be a piece in this offense, and maybe Matt LaCosse. Julian Edelman is going to be the far and away top producer. James White's going to be right below him, and then you're kind of talking about everyone else. I think that everyone sort of expected Mohamed Sanu to possibly be that number two and maybe, you know, jump frog James White. But at this point, I would be very surprised if that happened. I think that he'll be a complimentary piece.
What about Joe Edelman? Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. So with terms without Edelman, I mean, last week he seemed to not be his usual self against the Bengals. This week looked more like the Julian Edelman we know with 5 catches for 72 yards against the Bills. He's not 100%, I think it's fair to say. Is he hurt? Is he injured? I mean, do you think he is a player who the Patriots would rest if they didn't have to play him in week 17? What's his status heading into the postseason?
I think it would be, I mean, ideally, I think that they would rest him in week 17, except this is, you know, a must win game. If they win this game, then they've got that first round bye locked up, and they really need that. So it basically, I think that it's somewhere in between hurt and injured. I'm just going to just straddle that fence there just because it's something he can play through, but it seems like there's kind of a concern that it's something that could get worse, or it's something that might not improve if he does keep playing. So in week 17, I think that the smart move would be to make him active, you know, play him until they need to, and then rest him when the game, you know, in their case, they're probably hoping that it gets out of hand at some point, and then they can put back in Jacoby Myers, that they can use Mohamed Sanu more, or Philip Dorsett, or another option there, because, you know, you either rest him this week, you maybe lose, and then you don't have the bye week in the playoffs, or you play him this week, you know you have the bye week in the playoffs to rest him, and then he gets going in the divisional round. So, you know, in an ideal situation, you'd rest him here and in the bye week, but I mean, as bad as the Dolphins are, I really don't know how much the Patriots offense can produce if Julian Edelman is not in there.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, you know, it's scary to think about how dependent they are on Julian Edelman, but it seems like that's absolutely the case. In terms of the defensive side of the ball, I mean, this was a rare game where it seemed like Stephon Gilmore gave up a touchdown pass. John Brown ran a great route on a 53-yard score. Gilmore, you know, gave him some props after the game. Do you, I don't want to ask, do you think Gilmore's slipping? Because I think that's totally unfair. It's one play. But, I mean, in terms of how Gilmore has played this year, do you think we're almost spoiled where him giving up a touchdown pass to a guy who's been a top 15 receiver, you know, seems like a bad day? I mean, is it just that our expectations are too high for Gilmore? Or, you know, do you think Gilmore and J.C. Jackson are going to continue to be as effective as they've been during the regular season heading into the playoffs?
I think it's the latter. I think that they will be as effective as they were during the regular season. I think that, you know, as in all cornerback play, there's elements of luck. And I think that, you know, J.C. Jackson has been fantastic this season, but there has been some elements of luck where receivers have dropped passes. So, you know, we might see him, you know, coming back to the mean a little bit there. But overall, those guys are both great players. And in this week's matchup against the Bills, I thought that they both had tough assignments for the type of cornerbacks that they are. Stephon Gilmore going up against, you know, a smaller, speedier receiver. That's not the matchup that he usually has when the Patriots take on the Chiefs. He's not covering Tyreek Hill, and obviously John Brown is not Tyreek Hill, but he's essentially the Bills version of a Tyreek Hill-type player who is that smaller, speedier guy. So the Patriots put Gilmore on him because he's their top receiver, but it also wasn't that surprising to me to see Gilmore get beat by a player like John Brown, not a taller, more physical receiver who Gilmore definitely has a lot more success against. And J.C. Jackson was forced into more of a slot role going up against Cole Beasley because Jonathan Jones was out of the game with a groin injury. And then Jason McCourty only played 4 snaps before coming out of the game with his own groin injury. So maybe that's going to be happening into the future where the Patriots are going to have to play someone out of position in that slot role, whether that is J.C. Jackson or whether that is Patrick Chung. And maybe that is a position there an opposing offense could potentially exploit against the Patriots. Mm-hmm. And you could see another receiver who's like John Brown exploit the Patriots as well if they're going up against Stephon Gilmore, because there's a guy down the road there, Hollywood Brown, who's another, similar type of player to a John Brown, who is a smaller, speedier receiver who could give Gilmore some trouble. Gilmore did very well against John Brown in the first matchup. He did very well against Hollywood Brown against the Ravens. But just seeing that in the future on the schedule, I wonder if the Patriots, after they see what John Brown was able to do, that 53-yard touchdown, if they do adjust a little bit, maybe have a guy like J.C. Jackson take on Hollywood Brown rather than Gilmore, just because you can't afford to give up those types of big plays.
Are you concerned about Jonathan Jones heading into the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he didn't practice at all last week is definitely concerning, and those groin injuries for cornerbacks can be tough, especially a slot cornerback, someone who has to move around a lot. I remember a few years ago, Eric Rowe was dealing with a groin injury that almost knocked him out for the entire season, really. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing with Jason McCourty as well. I mean, he injured his groin about 5 weeks ago or something, and he's played 8 snaps since then in 2 separate games where, he plays, then re-aggravates it. So it's something that can linger for a long time. So with 2 of their top cornerbacks dealing with groin injuries, that Patriots cornerback position was the deepest in the NFL, and now you're knocking out half of that depth. So that is an area of concern heading into the playoffs where they'll definitely, I think the smart move would be to rest Jones and McCourty next week against the Dolphins. Then hopefully they'll have that bye week for their case. And then they would basically just have to reassess things a little bit there as far as where those guys are. But definitely not a great sign to have 2 corners dealing with groin injuries.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any inkling in general? Because I know I didn't. Any inkling that the defense was going to be this good over the course of the 2019 season?
No, I honestly didn't. I thought they'd be as good as they were last year just because, they added Jamie Collins, but Collins wasn't great with the Browns. Heading into the season, well, they replaced Trey Flowers with Michael Bennett. Obviously, that didn't go as we all expected it to. But I kind of saw the same defense with some similar replacements to what they had last season. And they've, I think, surprised a lot of people this season with the way that they played. They've obviously been fantastic. And it is funny because you would expect they've got a lot of older guys on this defense, guys like Dont'a Hightower have been in the league for a long time, Devin McCourty, Patrick Chung. So for that reason, you might expect them to regress a little bit this season. And obviously, that's been the complete opposite situation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, I had no idea. Zero idea. If you'd asked me who the best defense in football is going to be in 2019, I would have probably said 12 teams before I got to the Patriots. But hey, Bill Belichick, I don't know if you know this, Doug. Good defensive coach. Smart. Good at his job, as it turns out.
Seriously, and he's taken on a bigger role this season, obviously, with Brian Flores there with the Dolphins. And, I think that everyone's sort of guessing as to who's calling defensive plays, whether it's Steve Belichick or Jerod Mayo. I certainly think that Bill Belichick has a huge say in doing that.
Yeah, it certainly seems like it. One of the weaknesses for this team throughout the year with Steven Gostkowski injured has been kicking. I mean, do you think that is finally settled and the Patriots have some confidence in their kicking game heading into the playoffs?
I think it has a little bit, not to the point where anyone should be overly confident in Nick Folk, but he certainly has looked better since, I guess, having his appendix removed. Maybe that was me weighing him down before or something. Who knows? Feeling a little bit lighter in there. But, I mean, just the fact that Patriots trusted him to kick a 51-yard field goal was telling enough that Patriots fans as well should have more confidence in that kicking situation, because Patriots special teams, other than that field goal kicker extra points, have been fantastic this season. And now if Folk starts to play better as well, that would really be a pretty big boost. I certainly don't think that he'll be Steven Gostkowski, won't be Justin Tucker. But at this point, we're talking about, maybe a slightly below average situation there at the field goal kicking situation, whereas midway through the season, it was, possibly the worst situation in the NFL.
Yeah, it really felt like it was a mess. Let's finish up by talking about Tom Brady. I mean, obviously, the biggest story with this team annually is Tom Brady. They're how can I put this? I mean, I don't want to be alarmist. I don't want to raise false concern. We know Tom Brady's contract will void after the year. I mean, we do know that he put his house in Brookline on the market. I don't think it's sold, if I'm not mistaken, as of yet. I believe it's still on the market. But this has been a frustrating season. It's been a difficult season. There certainly seems to be more people around the NFL who think there's a chance Tom Brady plays somewhere besides New England in 2020. So I'll preface it this way, Doug, and you can answer it however you'd like. Do you think there's a chance Tom Brady retires? Do you think there's a chance Tom Brady is playing somewhere else in 2020? Or is this, again, much ado about nothing and Tom Brady will be back with the Patriots as he's always been for the 2020 season, regardless of what happens here in 2019?
I certainly think there's a possibility that he either retires or plays elsewhere. And heading into last game, I was sort of leaning towards him being gone next season just because of the way that this season has gone for Brady, where, you know, I think he's not that happy with the weapons the Patriots have. His stats are down. Maybe, you know, it would have been time for him to have a fresh start. If he can now continue the success that he had against the Bills moving on, then maybe that flips a little bit. But I think that, you know, there's been a lot made of the fact that he's selling his house, the fact that he's stepping down as a local co-chair of the Best Buddies organization, that, you know, maybe he's preparing to move on. The way that I'm looking at all of that is that he's essentially preparing for anything. He's never been in a situation before where he's going to be entering free agency. So, I mean, the fact that all options are open for him, it would be a little bit weird to be like, all right, well, you know, I'm not going to prepare at all for the future, and I'm just going to keep preparing like I'm going to live in Boston for the rest of my life, even though he has no idea what's going to happen next season. So I don't see it as him preparing to move on so much as it's him preparing for anything, because really anything is on the table for next year. I mean, who knows? Maybe the Patriots offer him a completely lowball contract. He essentially tells himself that he has no option to return. Then, you know, if he hasn't even started preparations on selling his house or, you know, doing any of these things, and then he has to travel back to Best Buddies in the middle of OTAs for his new team in June, that it's just not, obviously, that wouldn't be a great situation for Tom Brady to be in. So it is him cutting ties with the area a little bit, but that doesn't mean that he's not coming back. And I think that a lot of people have basically said that, you know, if you're looking at the situation of him being back here next year or being elsewhere, it's more likely that he'll be elsewhere. I mean, that's sort of obvious because there's three choices here and only one of them is being back in New England. So it's pretty easy to say that it's more likely that he either retires or plays somewhere else, because that's two of the three options. That's just, you know, weighing your odds right there with that situation. But no, I do think it's a possibility. I don't know what the Patriots would do, but there's some interesting free agent options that could compete with Jarrett Stidham or another rookie quarterback. And I think that all options are on the table for next season. So this is going to be Tom Brady's potentially last home regular season game in week 17. And I'll be curious to see how Patriots fans respond to that. And if there is some more, you know, glowing admiration for Tom Brady in that game, knowing that it could be his last regular season start in New England.
Yeah. And I mean, a game that still has, you know, some meaning when it comes to the postseason pitcher.
Absolutely. And I mean, obviously they'll be able to cheer for him in the postseason as well. But basically at this point, Patriots fans need to know that this could be the last few times that you're seeing Tom Brady in a Patriots uniform. And like I said, I'll be interested to see how they do respond to that, because, I mean, it was only a couple weeks ago that the Patriots were getting booed coming off the field at halftime against the Chiefs. So obviously that probably didn't sit too well with Tom Brady, but we'll see how they react moving forward here.
Yeah, I mean, a lot up in the air for the Patriots, not only in the rest of the 2019 season, but what happens in 2020 as well. And Doug, you'll be covering that throughout the 2019 season for the Patriots, but where can people check out more of the work you do?
Go to NESN.com for all of my Patriots coverage. Follow me on Twitter at Doug Kide. That's D-O-U-G-K-Y-E-D. And shoot me a follow on Instagram as well at Doug Kide. I don't do a lot of Patriots stuff, but I just like being liked on the internet. So that's a good place to do it.
That's honest. That's fair. No one will judge you for that, Doug. But thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Bill. It was fun.
All right, thanks, Doug, and thanks so much to my other guest today, ESPN's Jake Trotter. And guys, if you have not listened to ESPN Daily, I think you should rectify that concern. Please subscribe to ESPN Daily with Mina Kimes, a friend of the show. And if you like listening to me, you can hear more of me every Monday on ESPN Daily. This week on ESPN Daily, Mina and I talk about the Cowboys-Eagles game and about the 35-35 tanking nightmare that happened with two overtime games yesterday. And who actually won, who lost in the battle between four of the worst teams in football on Sunday afternoon. So check out ESPN Daily 5 days a week. Highly recommended. If you don't like me, I don't know why you're listening to this show, but that's fine. Just skip my day and listen to the other 4 days. It's a strongly recommended listen. And guys, we will be on the Bill Barnwell Show. We'll be out next week for the holidays. We'll be back with two shows the following week, but have a great holiday. Thanks for listening to the show this year. And we will be back heading into the postseason. Very exciting times and more football audio coming in a couple weeks. Thanks so much for listening.